Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Here we go. Five down, two to go, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Football Ramble. Come on, bloody come on. England stride on to beat Denmark at Wembley. It's Sunday, 4th of July. I'm Marcus Spaller.
I'm Andy Brassel.
And I'm Jim Campbell.
Wasn't it easy? What a joy.
I think that's the
it's
first.
Like having a football bath.
That's the first time we've meant that.
Andy, did you see us? Did you fucking see us, Andy Brassel?
You see, Marcus, as my first easy. That made me feel a bit tense because I didn't want to get the timing of it wrong. I felt a lot more tense during that than I felt at any stage on Saturday night.
Gentlemen, this is why we do this, isn't it? This is why we do this. This is why we love football. Oh,
this is what you want.
Your voice suggests that you had a big one last night, Jim.
It's a little reedy. Yeah, let's just address that now. This is not the first time I've loudly expressed myself this weekend.
Oh, yes. Well, England, 4-0 winners against Ukraine. I mean, it was absolutely incredible. It's the second time England have scored four in the knockouts of a major tournament. Of course, we won't say when the last time was because there's no need for that kind of crap.
It took more than 90 minutes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Can they do it on a warm night in Rome? Oh, yes, they can, ladies and gentlemen. Yes, they bloody can. I mean, it's remarkable, this England side, the way we kind of go into it with our baggage and go, oh, I do tricky, a nice professional job. And they score early, Jim, and you go,
yeah.
Well, that's just the ticket, isn't it?
Absolutely. And again, it was control, wasn't it?
Yes.
They are the protagonists in every game so far in the tournament. It'd be interesting to see what happens when in the next game. We'll come on to it later, obviously. What happens if that is challenged? Somebody else kind of takes the mantle a bit and sets the agenda in a way where you lose a little bit of that control. But, I mean, England are in a semi-final with the Euros without conceding a goal.
Mm.
It is genuinely astonishing stuff. It's everything you would want to happen. And you can plan for that, but that doesn't necessarily mean you can execute it. But I feel like, aside from the Scotland game, obviously, where England, I think, underestimated mm-hmm. both Scotland as a team and the occasion as well.
Mm-hmm.
Everything else has been pitch perfect, this included. It's just been absolutely remarkable. And the way that Southgate has rotated the squad as well has kept it fresh.
Andy, your man Jadon Sancho involved? Perhaps we'll come to that in a moment.
Well, I said he'd have his moment at some point during this tournament. I'm not sure that's quite it. I think there's a little bit more to come. But you know what? I feel not only the incredible calmness of the game, the performance, because this wasn't just control, this was fun control.
Yes.
Wasn't it? Yeah. Two words that don't normally go together.
Yeah, I was about to say,
organised fun.
Yeah.
Someone's got to arrange the stage.
It was fresh as week.
Yeah.
You do sound like a bit of a despot leader there. Come on, it's fun control, people. Okay.
But I have to say, having been talked through the bare facts by Nick Cave, I feel it is serious now. It's good.
But Andy, what did you make of it? Again, people, before the game, you're thinking to yourself, Ukraine are here on merit. I know they finished third, didn't they? Was it third they finished?
Yeah, they did finish third. And
they lost a couple of games, but they went through. But they're a seeded side. They were impressed with the qualification. Da-da-da-da-da. And they've beaten a decent Sweden side as well, who have been quite good, obviously aided with the sending off, you could say. So it was, but England were favourites going into the game.
Absolutely. And I don't know. The doing down Ukraine half of it, I don't really want to do because I think we should concentrate.
No, but I'm saying that they were a worthy opponent.
They were the worst third place side by some distance.
All right, fair enough.
In my opinion.
Okay, now you're doing them down.
Yeah, see, you've let me into it.
That's what happens, ladies and gentlemen.
You've let me into it.
I built them up so much that he had to do them down, and now he's going to eat his words.
Louis Theroux over there, tricking people into showing their cards.
Go on, Andy, say something else outrageous. Go on. But you do hate Ukraine, though, don't you, Andy? No, I'm joking. Go on. Sorry, you were going to say something actually sensible.
The big start is hugely important as well to not let them get set. And it was Raheem Sterling again.
Yeah.
I mean, what I found remarkable is that some people have, I think, not entirely grasped how good Sterling has been in this tournament.
I completely agree with you.
Because they've just gone, oh, it's the goals. I suppose we've got to give him some credit for the goals. It's like, no, that's nonsense. Especially not just in a team that doesn't really have that much natural width, but in a tournament where teams don't have that much natural width. Sterling has said, right, I'm going to make stuff happen in the most congested part of the pitch. And that is what he has done in every game. He has opened up space in the centre of the pitch.
Yeah.
I don't think you can put into words, in the context of this tournament, with players really not wanting to do that much running, not wanting to stretch a field, how impressive that is.
Mm.
And that's exactly the way in which he created this first goal for Harry Kane.
And the stamina that he's got, the energy, Jim. He looks like he can go on and on.
Absolutely. And to add to Andy's point as well, when that doesn't work, it looks like there's no plan. It looks a little bit headless chicken, doesn't it? It looks like a man just running into trouble. But obviously when it pays off, it causes absolute ruptures in defences. So it's one of the, it's aesthetically high risk, high reward, isn't it? Where some of the criticism is, oh, he doesn't know what he's doing. He's making it up as he goes along. Mm-hmm. It's not the case at all. It's part of the strategy is to unsettle defences, and Sterling has done that so, so well. The pass to Kane is obviously a different thing. That's just his quality and his vision executed so, so well. But you're right. I mean, he is absolutely undroppable. He's one of the players of the tournament.
Yeah, and his defensive work as well, obviously didn't need that much against Ukraine, but certainly against Germany dropping in there, which... Again, he just puts in such a shift. And him and Luke Shaw down that flank, Andy, I mean, Shaw was phenomenal last night. Spurred on by Jose Mourinho, perhaps. But was Mourinho even in the crowd? He arrived in Rome the other day, I think, didn't he?
I know.
But I mean, Luke Shaw, what a tournament he's having. I love the bite that he gives in the tackle. And obviously the assists and everything, but what he offers England down that left side is fantastic.
Yeah, and I think you can see what Jim was saying about Gareth Southgate using the squad. I think the freshness is so important.
Yeah.
And England did look fresh.
Yeah.
I think to have a little bit in reserve is something that England traditionally, not just in the first bit of the Southgate regime, I think you can go back through Hodgson, Ericsson, Hoddle, any England coach that you want to remember, really, England have been very bad at that.
Yeah.
About keeping a little bit in reserve.
But against Croatia in the World Cup, before the game, a lot of the pundits here were saying, well, you know, Croatia have played extra time twice on the way to that semi final.
But they finished that game so much stronger than England.
Exactly. England were shot to bits.
Exactly. And I think to leave that Premier League mindset of, right, let's smash it from the off.
And against the press and the fans, well, not all the press, sorry, I shouldn't say that, but against large sections of the press and the fans going, well, come on, get Grealish, can we not play five up front?
That's the thing, isn't it? It's a cultural thing. It is what the players are brought up in, and it's what we're brought up in, this idea that you have to go hell for leather.
Yeah.
Whereas for Southgate to just shut off all that noise and say, no, we're not going to do that. That is not the way to win the tournament. And I know we're not quite there yet, but I think if you look back on previous Euros, if you look back, say Euro 2012, for example, I think the way Spain make it to the final, with playing very within themselves the whole way, and then in the final against Italy, they're like, right, let's let them have it.
And one of those victories...
And it's you know, the authoritative performance in a really big game. And not that I'm saying that England have necessarily peaked too early. I think they've still got a lot. Especially when you think how much more there is to come from Sancho, Shaw, Mason Mount, who, you know, as luck would have it, has been made to have a little breather.
Yeah.
Which, again, I think is something that works really well for England, especially with the amount of work that he had to get through in the back half of the season. I think that idea of peaking at the end is... Yeah.
Well, that's clearly what he wants to do. I mean, obviously, we're now in the, you know, we're coming to the end. There's four teams left, and that's been the plan, which is, as you say, Jim, it's being executed. But Jadon Sancho came in, and it's a funny one. Obviously, he transferred to Manchester United the other day, but he.
Do you reckon that's why he got picked?
Yes, he's now playing for an English side, and therefore we have a duty. No, I don't think it's like. I think I said this before. Was it Neil McCann, who was playing amazing for Hearts, you know, pasted Burns of fullbacks and all, never got picked for Scotland under Craigie Brown, signed for Rangers, and then a couple of months, he signed, I think, forgive me if this is wrong, but he's maybe signed at the end of the season. And then when those first set of international friendlies or games come along in the August or September, whatever they were, Craig Brown picks him and goes, well, you're showing a lot of maturity and blah, blah, blah. And all this, and like, he's barely kicked the ball for it. Like, he's exactly the same player, for crying out loud. But with Jadon Sancho, again, it's kind of, Southgate will say to him, well, give me a headache. We go in there, but he's hardly kicked a ball, you know, 8 minutes or whatever he got against the Czechs, comes in, and okay, he wasn't amazing, but showed some brilliant
stuff.
I thought
he was excellent.
Well,
he was
very good. I mean, defensively, he might, you know, again, as you know, against Denmark, who are a better side than Ukraine, if he's picked, we'll have to do a little bit more, perhaps. But I mean, Jim, you know, as Andy's talking, the way he's rotating the squad, Southgate, and the way, you know, making the right substitutions and all that kind of stuff, and saying to Harry Maguire, right, we've won the game, no need for a second yellow kind of thing. It is amazing. And Maguire and Henderson, we were worried about them injury-wise. Well, Henderson gets his first goal. Obviously, that's a nice little one. But the way he...
slabber.
Well, come on. Maguire comes in against the Czechs. England are already through. He comes through that and he's just taken to it like a duck to water. And with Henderson, he is getting more minutes. And again, everyone looked like they're getting stronger as it's going.
Absolutely. And also, I mean, generally speaking, I don't know the stats on this, but you certainly feel like it's quite rare that a team goes through a tournament if they're going to go all the way without at some point having extra time.
Yeah.
So all of these players being up to speed and
no bookings. Having,
not just no bookings, but having minutes in the tournament.
Yeah.
So that they're not coming on, making their tournament debut at absolute crunch time is crucial. They all feel comfortable in it. They all feel like they're up and running. And he's managed that absolutely superbly. I love as well that one of the first things that happened at the final whistle is that he's got his arm around Jack Grealish.
Yeah.
That he's, you know, he's, who knows what he said to him, but clearly he's managing that situation. Grealish's face on the bench was... just clearly just so disappointed in a pure sense that he wants to be part of this party.
Of course
he does. We all want him there as well because he's such an entertaining player. And there will be more to come from Grealish. I'm sure we'll see him on the pitch again. And let's all try not to panic about that, Twitter. but he's managing all of these things. And genuinely, it's very difficult to pick holes in what Southgate is doing. You will find people doing that, but if you look at it with a mature, sober analysis, he's doing everything right, and it is uncharted territory as an England fan, isn't it?
While we're on mature, sober analysis, I have to say what I felt.
Sorry, is your hypocrisy radar gone off?
what I felt really, really good about is the fact that a 4-0 Jordan Pickford had his Jordan Pickford moment, and nothing came of it, And it was 4-0 at the time. I thought, oh, thank God that's not coming in like the semi-final or something.
Also did a really unnecessary punch, didn't he? So there's maybe a couple of those moments.
But that's the thing, that comfort to be able to, not just to spread your wings a bit in the first like hour, 70 minutes of the game, but then to play it out, making those subs, the odd little moment like that, and just to... be comfy in possession. I mean, to be able to do that in a quarter final is amazing.
Yeah.
And go back to what you said about Southgate and the squad. You know, as soon as he did the post-match interview, he was immediately talking about, you know, I immediately think of the lads who didn't make the squad, who weren't in, or the players who haven't been playing. You think about someone like Ben Chilwell. Ben Chilwell just won the Champions League and he probably won't play now at this tournament. You'd be surprised if he did. Yes, the COVID situation with him and Mason Mount, you know, but... he must be, you know, I had him down as a starter before the tournament.
Same.
Now, I don't think...
although it's close. It's
very close between him and Shaw. Yeah. But certainly there was the chat there. So how do you keep him interested? How do you keep those kind of players? Mm. Because you need that harmony across everybody because everyone is pulling in the same direction, which seems to be the case. But I thought it was an interesting quote from Southgate. He said, moments like tonight, we didn't want to take a step backward. We wanted to really grasp the opportunity rather than hope that we might win or let fate have a chance to play its part. It's so interesting, Jim, this psychology of what he's saying. You know, it's that old adage of, well, take and, you know, make the most or I'm not getting my words right here. Whatever you can control, boss that. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And let's
control
not...
control the controllables.
Confucius, I think it was, who said that.
Right.
Confucius I'm very said confused. Control the controllables.
I think it was whatever you can control, boss that.
Yeah. Exactly.
Own it. Own it, son.
Exactly. Be the mayor of it. And that's it. You know, this kind of, we're here, let's just kind of hope for the best and so on. He's thinking, no, if we apply ourselves... against Ukraine, it shouldn't be too much of a problem. And again, the maturity. But, you know, great to see Kane getting a couple of goals and nearly
perfect.
Scored again, perfect. A perfect hat-trick.
Yes.
My goodness.
I mean, we also haven't assessed yet that he nutmegged the keeper with a header. How often do you see that? Absolutely brilliant. Because we've all been waiting for Kane to ignite, really, at the tournament. I don't think anyone really doubted that he had it in the locker, maybe at times, but we're all hoping he would get up to speed. And as has been said many times before and on this podcast, Harry Kane goal droughts do not last long, whether he's slightly unfit, whether he's slightly out of form or not. He plays his way back into form.
That's
perfect.
That's the thing with him. The way that the world views Harry Kane, it's unusual for a player of such high profile, who's clearly elite and has unanimous approval. But the public view of Kane and the Kane view of Kane are two very, very different things. If he's dropping off, if it's not quite happening for him, he will think, yeah, I just need to play more. That is it. And he has total faith in himself.
Nice to hear him see him mouthing, we go 4-4-2 when they were at 1-0. Did you see that?
He's a leader, isn't he?
Yeah.
And this is the great thing about England as well. It's that a lot of these players are captains at their clubs. And you're really, really seeing that.
Come on, Harry Maguire's head around it. You're having a bit of that all day long. When that goes in, you think, here we go. Yeah, that's the moment. He's such a hero to England fans.
I had a sense that he might have something. No, I had a sense that he might have something in the locker. Yeah.
I thought he was offside. I'll be honest with you. That's the only goal that I didn't actually celebrate in the moment because I genuinely thought he was
offside. Because his head's quite large?
Yes, exactly. Right. Yeah. No, if you see his arm outstretched. When I was watching, as the free kick was about to be taken, I was looking, thinking, where's Maguire? And I looked at him, I thought, might be just offside, and the ball comes in and he slams it into the net. The whole place goes wild and I was thinking, I don't know, he might be offside. And then I honestly waited until they kicked off and then I went mad myself.
Sir Slabhead.
Yeah, but you mentioned earlier, the early goal helped England and it absolutely did. And that goal at the start of the second half, it was perfect. It was absolutely perfect because I remember turning around to a chap I was watching it with just saying, I want a nice relaxing second half here and bang. I mean, you couldn't have asked for more. 3-0 up.
It was great.
After 51 minutes or whatever it was. But that won't always be the case for England. And it will be interesting if they do concede. How do they react? Yeah. Or if they're up and they go behind. We haven't seen this side at this tournament go behind.
Yeah. You know, they say that about Italy though. And then Italy concede their first goal when they're 2-0 up.
Yeah, in ideal circumstances, though, right? You're pretty certain they're going to win the game at that point. So if England go like 1-0 down...
Well, they had a little bit of a flutter, but it's just, anecdotally, that's quite good that we don't have to think about that anymore, you know?
Yeah. So
and I could see the same thing happening to England.
Imagine what a flex it would be if like England kick off, just kick it down the pitch and deliberately score an own goal. Right in like the first second. Like, come on.
We just don't want to think about it anymore.
What do you think of that? Be a surprise move. One that I wouldn't want to get behind. It's incredible. No England manager has won more knockout games at major tournaments than Gareth Southgate.
Wow.
How about that for a stat? He is methodically going through this, isn't he? I think that's the approach that he's taken.
I think he is a really good example of how different international and club management are. Mm-hmm. Because there was always a sense, especially when he got the job, of he's the caretaker, he's available, he's the company man. And what has he done at club level? It doesn't matter what he's done at club level. And that really doesn't matter at international level. I think you look at the way his attention to detail in every realm that's necessary, and maybe some of those things aren't so necessary in, like, you know, cultivating a relationship with a country that in a very, very different way, say someone like Luis Felipe Scolari did with Portugal. Mm-hmm. I think his understanding of the whole processes of the FA and every level of development is super important. Mm-hmm. It makes you think that he could be one of those coaches, regardless of what happens in this tournament, who could be a 10-yearer in the England job.
Yep.
I think, because he's just got that great calmness and sense of the overall. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that all that stuff at the beginning about, you know, well, what has he done? It doesn't matter.
But I think, Andy, one of the most impressive things about Southgate, he learns a lot. And I know people will think, well, obviously.
It's
not always the case. You know, if you remember, Stuart Pearce was he number two or was in Capello's backroom staff? And we thought, okay, is he going to be groomed? Or what's going to happen there with regards to further positions? And we can point to other people. Southgate was an under-21 manager for ages. And I remember being at St George's Park once and interviewed Southgate. It was ahead of, I think it was the European under-21 championships. And the way he was, he was like your kind of your sort of summer camp leader or something, you know, welcoming the lads in. They obviously enjoyed his company, but he was in charge. And the way he thought, yeah, he really kind of relishes this, and they're responding, and there was a nice, lovely atmosphere. But he sees those under-21s, how they respond. What's it like to go away to tournaments, learn the lessons? Because these younger players, some of them are already superstars. A few of them, but you know, there's some big names. others, you know, will be, go on to be big names. Learn the lessons there. Then he gets in the England job, learning the lessons of Russia World Cup and all this kind of stuff. And I think that's the impressive thing. As you say, he sees the whole picture. He sees how the camps are. You know, we remember Baden-Baden. What an absolute, you know, madhouse that was with
a different time, a very more innocent time. Well, maybe not more innocent.
Innocent
time.
Is not the word that I would use, Andy Brassels. Especially some of the stories that were regaled before. That anyway, less about that, the better. But there was that, and then you have the sort of the prison camp of Capello and so on, and then you had sort of Hodgson and Neville and so on, which was sort of really neither here nor there.
It is really interesting, though, isn't it, that we've always had this image of England that it has to be the lions roaring and beating the chest.
Yeah.
And Gareth Southgate is totally apart from that.
Yeah, but he gets it though. He understands the sort of the tension between these things. And you know, when you mentioned Spain earlier, now England are not as good as that Spain side because they're one of the best, you know, especially 2012, one of the best international sides of all time. But there are a few little comparisons in that in 2008 when Spain won the Euros, Luis Aragonés was his style of play. People were not happy with that in Spain. Mm-hmm. They wanted something different.
You're always going to get that, aren't you?
Of course.
Genuinely, do you think...
I don't think anyone's complaining about this performance, by the way.
Oh, absolutely not, no. No, but do you think that comes from the circumstances in which England won the World Cup? In that they did win it with a barnstorming 4-2 victory at Wembley over the Germans.
I cannot
and it was
believe,
all very,
Jim,
like,
why are you mentioning that?
No, but
Jim.
That, no, you're doing me a disservice by even saying that. But do you think that's where... Because it's part of England's football... national identity to want that, isn't it? To effectively to want that style of football in every game. And if perhaps that hadn't been the case, maybe expectations would be different.
Yeah, quite possibly. I think that England, with the pace of the Premier League and the direct approach of English football and culture over the years, you want that to translate to international football. And even if at times, rarely, but the odd occasion where actually it does go okay, you just can't keep it up for
it. But it's hard to change a culture. It's hard to change the expectation of an international football team's culture.
We're talking about over a century of culture in the case of England, aren't we?
Yeah.
And that's what I mean when I refer back to that game, because there are still people alive who talk about it and it echoes down the ages. Like, you meet people who were, you know, who weren't alive at Euro 96, and it's like, that's quite weird and surprising, and they're learning about it from the endless montages about it now. And it's like, oh, of course, you don't think about this in the same way, but it carries on, and these are the expectations that the team have to deal with.
Well, there we are, ladies and gentlemen. Right, it's time for a quick break.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We're nearly at the end of the Premier League season, so I'm pretty drained. So many tense matches, and some not so tense, as well as point deductions, a battle for the title, and teams on the brink of relegation. All that suspense has me needing a well-deserved break. With the year in full swing, it can be easy to get swept up in work, social engagements, even keeping up with all this football, and we can spread ourselves too thin. But with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and really recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
Ow!
I'm bored watching Newcastle.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Football Ramble. Let's see how we got on in the final round of Betway's Four to Score. Across the Euros this summer, there's been £250,000 up for grabs across five rounds of Four to Score, and it's completely free to play. In game one, it was Switzerland versus Spain. Andy picked Haris Seferovic. The result was Jordan Shaqiri, because Denis Zakaria's goal, he was an own goal. The first goal, so that didn't count. So it then goes to the second one, which was Shaqiri, of course. Game two, Belgium versus Italy. Pete picked Ciro Immobile, and the result was Nicolo Barella. In game three, Czech Republic versus Denmark. Jim, you picked Kasper Dolberg. Of course, it was Thomas Delaney.
Dolberg did score.
He did score. Game four, Ukraine versus England. Kate picked Harry Maguire. He did score, but it wasn't the first one, because the first one was Harry Kane. So there we are. 0 out of 4.
But so close. All of them so close.
And yet so far, Andy. But yeah, get involved with Four to Score. Further T's and C's applies, of course. You've got to be 18 or over, and do gamble responsibly. For more information on that, head to begambleaware.org.
Yes, we're asking people on Twitter how they feel about England last night. Ukulele Kev, it was the opposite of hard/difficult. Can't remember the word, though. Me neither. Bob Wilcox, it was so good that I felt a weird lack of euphoria. This must be like when Manchester City win the League Cup. Rob calls, every win Southgate gets Southgate a little more credit with those who just want attacking football. He shouldn't need to be earning that respect by now. Clearly has a plan, chuffed a bit, but hungover.
Nice one, Robbo.
We've got an email as well from Pace Randolph. I mean,
all right,
brilliant.
Yeah,
well done.
The fastest hand in the West.
Well done, your parents. I'd like to open up the discussion on what lengths people are having to go around the world to watch our beloved Three Lions as they bravely march on through the mangled remains of every slug and minnow the Euros has thrown their way. I'll start because I'm currently living up a mountain in the middle of bumfuck nowhere, northwestern New South Wales. This morning I woke up at 4:15 to drive 30 minutes to the nearest town with a 4G signal strong enough for me to tether my laptop to my phone in the car and watch the game in the pitch black of a winter night on the side of the highway. On top of this, I was FaceTiming my screen to my girlfriend, who was also madly riding around the bush in another part of the country in order to find a location to stream from. She eventually found a spot and we were able to watch the rest of the game together over the phone. And what a game. Worth every effort. Come on, boys. Pace Randolph. I mean, are these the ultimate couple goals?
I think so.
Is this the best couple on earth?
Yeah.
Brilliant. What an effort.
I wonder if we should have a whip round to pay for their phone bills, because
Great. Yeah. Can anyone top that? Get in touch. I'd be surprised if anyone can come near that, but have a go. Step up.
That is incredible. There was a lot of English people who live on the continent travelling to Rome, because obviously you couldn't travel if you live on the island of Britain. So there were those who live in Berlin or Vienna, all around mainland Europe, who were travelling to Rome. There's some quite good stories there. People were just like, yeah, all in, sleeping at sort of train stations, all the rest of it, blah, 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 got there. And there was about 2,500 England fans in the stadium. Like, you could hear the chants, which was quite impressive, really, if you think about it. You know,
I mean, that is the thing, really, about staying cool and calm for the tournament. That whereas there might be euphoria here, I'm sure the players feel quite relaxed about it. They played in front of a sub 12,000 crowd.
Yep.
They had a nice time, but it wasn't like, you know, the whole release of the Germany game.
Well, and in fact, it probably did them good having that game away from home after Germany.
Yeah. I agree.
Yeah, so we shall see. I mean, they're going to play Denmark in the semi-final, of course, on Wednesday. The other semi-final will be Spain versus Italy, also at Wembley. I mean, the Danes got through against Czech Republic. And I mean, their incredible story continues as well. You know, there was great emotion at the end of the game, of course. And we know all the obvious stuff about Denmark, but them getting to a semi-final, Jimmy, is glorious.
It is. Yeah, it's a worrying narrative, isn't it? The echoes of 1992.
Yes.
A Schmeichelin goal.
Yeah,
it's
absolutely.
You know, as much as we're loving this in England and loving the kind of release of that quite cathartic experience, the Danes are having exactly the same.
Yeah.
And they fear nothing because of what happened earlier on in the tournament with Christian Eriksen. They are absolutely fearless. But also, I mean, there is so much more to it than that. People are sort of just thinking they're running on the fuels of emotion.
Yeah.
But, you know, they are executing their plan very, very well. They're doing what England are doing, really. They are controlling games, they're setting the agenda. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be, I mean, this is a stern test, a far, far sterner test than obviously Ukraine were.
100%.
Yeah, I mean, Andy, I think people are sort of, I understand people are going on about the emotions that surround this Danish side. That is understandable, but actually they are forgetting that they're a decent side.
Yeah, and the spine is comparable to other good sides.
It is, absolutely right. And with Denmark, you know, obviously they lost their first game. Then they played Belgium, who were playing as though they could go on and go all the way.
They got to bring Kevin De Bruyne in.
Exactly.
On a sub. That's a pretty big advantage.
It's not too bad. But that first half against Belgium, they were particularly good.
They were amazing.
Then, of course, they knocked four past Russia. Mm. Then they wiped the floor with Wales. Mm. And then against Czech Republic. And Czech Republic are a better side than what people have been thinking.
They're really
thinking.
Good, I think.
And that first half, Denmark, they were impressive.
There were two halves of this, really. Yeah. Because the fact that they conceded that they had a first half that went completely to plan. Mm. Then they concede the goal to Schick early on at the start of the second half.
And then you think, what do you do? How do you then play it?
And they have to really dig in.
Yes.
So they show two ways of winning.
And they didn't really look like conceding a second.
No, Schmeichel had his moments, mm-hmm. Which makes you think his family not only own the Premier League, but the Euros as well. the way they saw it out was very, very impressive.
Yeah. What about that cross for the second goal? I mean, there's been some beautiful...
Joachim Möller, that's amazing. Yeah.
There's been some absolute... Do you know what it reminded me of? Hullet to Van Basten against England in 1988. You remember that goal?
Yes.
That sort of outside of the boot curled pass. I mean, it was perhaps...
Although I do think, I know what you're saying with the international context, but obviously I would say this, but Ricardo Quaresma is sitting at home going, you owe me money! You owe me money!
I think that goal, Dahlberg's goal, is one of the moments of the tournament because, and I don't think I've ever seen this before, the goal and the celebration of the goal were part of the same
movement.
They were
baked in, weren't they?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was glorious.
Absolutely amazing.
I mean, he's got a very unemotional face, Kasper Dahlberg. He's very handsome, but with a very unemotional face. You feel as if he's going to sort of, you know, score the goal, slip on some sort of navy blazer, deck shoes, step onto a boat that's worth £4 million and sail into the sunset. Which is maybe possible with how much space they've got behind the goal at Baku. I don't know.
What do you think of Denmark's back line? I mean, you've got Christensen, of course, who won the Champions League.
Has improved enormously under Tuchel.
But he was, exactly. You see that when he comes on for Thiago Silva in the Champions League final, just slots in, I know what I'm doing here, and was immense.
Kier's a great leader.
Exactly, yeah. Vestergaard is putting in performances.
Yeah.
And behind them, they've got Schmeichel.
Yeah.
England are going to have to do a lot against that back line. I mean, again, one can get a bit all euphoric after that 4-0 win. But I think this is a sterner test. If people think this is going to be the same as Ukraine, and bearing in mind the goals came at the right times for England to make it more comfortable.
Yeah.
And to basically say to Ukraine, lose interest as soon as you can.
In terms of match management, I think the Danes have been really good since they've got past those first two games, which we can't imagine what it was like for them to play those. But I think as well, we talk about England getting away from Wembley and being able to breathe, take it in, take stock. Well, Denmark have had the ability to do that twice. And I think if you look at the game against Wales, they weren't 4-0 better than Wales. No way. Mm. Like Wales had their moments in that game. But the way they...
But maybe the first 20 minutes, but they were better than Wales.
I'm not saying they weren't better than Wales. They weren't 4-0 better than Wales. And Wales felt certain moments went against them, of course. But I think the way that they managed that and then just picked them off, that was really, really impressive.
Mm, indeed, yeah. What about Patrick Schick? He's had a great tournament. Mm. Drew level five goals apiece with Ronaldo. I don't know who's got the most assists.
Penaldo.
I don't know who's got the most assists, though, because that doesn't it go to that? I hate that. I absolutely hate that.
Is that right?
Yeah. They did that in the FIFA World Cup as well, when... as opposed to the other World Cups. When there was a number of players... Was it the World Cup I'm thinking of when Thomas Müller won it in 2014?
So it's assists, not penalties.
I believe so. That's how it goes to, and who's got the. Well, and I just sort of think
either way, if it was a level, I'm sure like Ronaldo's won so much stuff. I'm sure he'd just ring up Patrick Schick and go, "Yeah, you can have it. I'm fine."
Yeah,
that seems like him.
That's what he'd do.
But I just think that with regards to the assists, like, what's that got to do with anything?
Yeah,
it's on the goals.
Just share it.
Yeah.
If two people, just give it to the man who scored amount.
From the halfway line.
Yes. Yeah.
That's better.
Yeah.
The furthest distance, combined distance, the furthest out all your goals were, that's how you win it.
Yeah. Would Ronaldo be what? Five times 12. Oh, 18. Sorry. It's 18. Yeah.
I do feel a little bit sorry for the Czechs. One, because I talked about Ukraine being the worst of the third place teams. Mm-hmm. I think the Czechs were the best of them.
Yeah.
They were really, really good. Mm-hmm. They were great in the group. They even had their moments against mm-hmm. England, especially in the second they half did, yeah. of that. And, you know, they could have won that game. Mm. I think, if a few things had gone their way, and my goodness, it was attritional in that second half. But it would have been just quite a nice story, actually, them coming back to Wembley.
Yeah.
Of course, we talk about the significance of that. But them coming back to Wembley and, like, trying to slay the ghost of Euro 96. I know we're banned about talking about Euro 96 now. But I found out a really interesting thing, actually, how Vladimir Smica in Euro 96 got married between the semi-final and the final. Which is really weird. Mm. So basically,
someone he met at Euro 96. They were like, let's do it. Let's do it. We can't go to Vegas, but we'll do it here.
I love the idea of like 96 Wembley as Vegas. Yeah. But yeah, he went to the coach at the time. I'm getting married, by the way. I forgot to mention it, but I'm getting married later in the week. And he said, well, if we win the semi-final against France, you can do what you like. So he went away, mm-hmm. got married, and then come back for the final.
Wow. How about that?
What a honeymoon.
Yeah, it's decent, that, isn't it?
Incredible. Absolutely incredible. Well, gentlemen, we are looking forward to England versus Denmark. And well done, those Danes. There'll be 60,000 at Wembley.
See that? I'm so excited about that.
Yeah. I hope. Well, again, this is me doing the old England fan routine. Well, I hope that doesn't put too much pressure on the players.
Yeah.
Again, trust
at some point. At some point in the tournament, you're going to have to deal with pressure. And I feel like he has prepared them for every eventuality. Mm-hmm. Like, basically, if Gareth Southgate's your dad, inside your tournament rucksack, you have got summer clothes.
Yes.
You've got a micro fleece that packs mm-hmm. all the way down.
Mm-hmm. Pen knife.
Yeah. You've got some sort of waterproof sea shoes as well. Well, sea shoes need to be waterproof. You've definitely got a small cagoule in there.
Yeah.
Sea shoes.
Yeah.
Are sea shoes a thing?
Yeah, sea shoes are a thing. You can walk a thing.
Hike on water?
Yeah. You don't want to be stood on like a very stony riverbed.
Oh, I see.
That's why you're not England coach, basically.
I should say so.
And I'm sure they'll have loads of like power gel and energy bars in there and all that sort of stuff. So. Yeah, it will still be in a bag that is, you know, okay to carry and not going to break your back.
And like a personalised letter of encouragement. Yeah.
You're confusing this with the Duke of Edinburgh. I think that's what's happening here.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, I think that's a good way to end the show. Thank you very much for listening to the Football Ramble on tomorrow's show. I'm back with Luke and Pete. Promises to be an absolute cracker, everybody. So get your ears around that. Until then, thank you very much, Andy Brassel.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jim Campbell.
You're welcome.
Thank you, everybody. And thank you, England. See you tomorrow.
Confusingly as well, in some parts of Spain, when they say chorizo, what they will mean is like bribes.
Oh,
right.
Yeah.
Oh, I see.
It's like a policeman saying, give me the sausage. I like that.
Lincolnshire. Glasgow Square.
The Football Ramble is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember. Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.